Today's episode of Hollywood How Did You Get Here is brought to you by G Technologies, a leading storage solution brand for the entertainment industry. Stay tuned for a special offer from G Technology later on in the show. I'd also like to give a special thanks to our lighting sponsor, LEDGO Technologies, for supporting our show. On today's show, we sit down with cinematographer Paul Andresen to talk about shooting for reality TV. We'll find out what goes into rigging one of Jay Leno's classic cars, following naked contestants around a jungle, and if there's anything real in reality TV. So grab your headphones and find a comfortable chair, and we'll be right back. All right. Welcome, Paul. How are you?
Hi, Tim. How are you doing today?
Good, 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 good. Thank you for coming. Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. And good seeing you.
Yeah, it's nice to get out of the corona isolation.
Oh, isn't it, though? Man, oh, man. But we're here to talk about how you got to this point. So I'm going to stay away from corona for today, and we're going to stick on your past all the way to now. So we've known each other a while, and we've worked together on a couple different things, and you're primarily focused on sort of reality television. Is that fair to say?
I would say fair to say. Well, it's I'm kind of an odd square peg in a round hole. I do reality. I'd say more of the adventure dude type of off-roading, building motorcycles,
right, and
cars.
We've got X-Men and Bering Sea Gold, and we'll get to those. But let's back it up a little bit. How do you get from, where did you start?
I started in music videos, funny enough. All through the 90s, I was directing and shooting music videos. And I did all of that. I did that, and I was doing pretty well for a long time. And then come along, you know, the first internet bubble and Napster and the decline of MTV. I got caught up in that slow train coming and watched that whole industry drive right off the end of a track.
Yeah, music video used to be pretty stable, good way to make some money for, what, a decade?
Oh, even more. I did it for the entire 90s. I had a pretty good run.
And now they're kind of rare.
Well,
I mean, they're still being done. I mean, I've...
And now it's sort of the democratization of the music video, because now it's like any band can... If you're in a band, make a music video. It's very possible. 5Ds, GoPros. And then you put it up on the great democratization of music video, which is YouTube. So my good friends, the Insane Clown Posse, believe completely in YouTube, and now they have an outlet for their videos, because remember in the old days, MTV was a monopoly. If it didn't play on MTV, it didn't exist.
Right, VH1. There was two ways to go, right?
VH1 was sort of the more like classic rock stuff, like the Eagles were on.
Yeah, dude, that was my stuff. There's a few years difference, but enough to put me into the Eagles camp. But yeah, we watched, I mean, it was both for us. Both for us. I mean,
oh, yeah.
We played that stuff like it was the radio station. It just turned it on and left it on.
It was water cooler talk. Did you see the new Guns N' Roses? Did you see the new Metallica video? How awesome was that?
And there was work to be had back then.
There was tons of work. I mean, when I finally hit my stride mid-90s, I couldn't believe how many music videos were being made.
Yeah, all over this town.
And they were companies everywhere, all over town, like in Hollywood, Hollywood Boulevard.
But that switch got turned off almost like a light switch. It just stopped.
It felt like it for me.
So you reinvented yourself and moved towards reality. Because why?
Well, it's so funny. The music video world just sort of dried up. But when God shuts the door, he opens up a window. And that window became, the coincided with the birth, the death of the music video coincided precisely with the birth of reality TV. And then... reality TV, so I just sort of, I was like shooting some stuff for friends, and friends started working on reality TV, and the next thing you know, you want to shoot this TV show. And I'm like, sure, because I was broke and had a baby on the way.
But, well, let's define reality TV a little bit. I mean, it's what is reality? Is it Dancing with the Stars? Is that reality TV, or is that, I mean,
well,
reality
I think-
just... What does it mean to be reality TV? Why is it not a documentary? Why is it not a narrative?
What's... Well, I think you have to... Documentary and reality and all that, they break into genres. I mean, there's the dating show reality. There's the cooking show reality. There's the medical reality. There's the build something. And then there's adventure. And then there's sort of magazine-y reality shows. So reality is a broad... description for very many different types of shows.
But if you're in that industry, though, I wouldn't say you specialize, but you kind of gravitate to a particular type of reality. Like you did Storage Wars for a long time.
Storage Wars was a great reality
and
show.
The fan base for that was huge.
Well, it was huge. It was a lot of fun too. That show was a lot of fun, and I think it came through in the show, and I think it came through in the people who became very dedicated fans of that show.
I like that show, and I watched it. We used to watch it all the time.
We did 300 some episodes.
Oh my God.
Over a span of 8 or 9 years. It was a great show.
And then it franchised. All of a sudden, there was Dallas. There was different cities, right?
And I worked on Dallas, Texas. And then we also did a New York version for a few years. And there was a Miami version. And now the Miami one is the only one I didn't work on. But 4 versions plus other spinoffs. That was a great money-making show.
What's the craziest thing you ever found in one of those storage units?
Craziest? Well, you know, I mean, there were often sexual aids found.
Oh.
There were often meth head lockers, so that were piled full of broken TVs and taken apart bikes and computers all in pieces.
Did you ever tempted to bid on one?
So we are up in North Hollywood, and we open it up, and there are Panavision cases and light stands, seemingly light stands. And no one bid on it. None of the cast bid on it. So behind the camera, I start throwing up a hand. And then I'm like bidding against somebody. And I'm throwing my hand and someone's raising me and I'm throwing my hand. And I turn around and it's our PA.
And he's bidding up against you?
He's bidding up the DP of the show.
Yeah, but you're bidding on Panavision cases. What do you think was in a Panavision case?
Well, my eyes got really big. And then when I won the unit, I opened them up and they were all empty.
Yeah, they don't. If you see a Panavision camera in the wild, you need to call the cops. Those don't exist outside of Panavision.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can't buy one. So,
well, maybe there was a lens in there. I don't know. Yeah. They were lens cases. They were blue.
And they looked.
And you know what happened?
What'd you do with all the cases?
Well, it's so funny. You know what happens to that foam in the case after a while, right? Yeah, it starts really turning into like sticky, gooey stuff.
Yeah.
That's all it was. So I ended up taking the cases home and I ended up just giving them away.
All right. So you said how many episodes?
It's over 300 episodes.
And you DP'd all 300 of them?
Not all of them. I mean, you couldn't stick around for that long. I would come and go. But I started the show and we cast everybody and it was tons of fun.
You've also done Axemen and currently Jay Leno's Garage, Naked and Afraid, I think you're on.
Bering Sea Gold.
And Bering Sea Gold.
It's one of the original Monster Garage people. We did a show called Biker Build Off for many years.
I remember that one.
Yeah, it was a good one. But what really got me going was the show that kept the lights on at Original Productions with Tom Beers was Plastic Surgery Before and After. So I would have to go in and cover the people before the event, during the event, and after the event.
I don't think I remember that one. The biker thing I would have watched, but so you would cover somebody's plastic surgery?
Oh yeah, we are down in the trenches.
Really, like in the operating room?
In the operating room,
all gloved up, all sterilized, all.
Yep, running the whole time, and there were some interesting things on that show.
Really.
Oh, but
I would have watched that. I was probably making a living.
Oh, so my first reality show was On the Inside. It's a fascinating job. I got this gig randomly through a friend, and this lady calls me up, and she's like, hey, man, you want to go do 4 weeks at the L.A. coroner's office?
Just, okay. Flesh that out a little bit.
So they were doing On the Inside, like the machinations of the L.A. coroner's office. And so we would get up early in the morning and go to the coroner's office and follow these people around and go into crime scenes and doing the autopsies and all the lab work. And it was full on freak show.
How do you not get in the way? I mean, I could see, look, you get in the way on a Storage Wars, fine. You know what? These are real, you know, you're at a crime scene.
You try to be respectful, use your lens.
How big a crew?
Like 4 people. so different than the music videos that I'd just come from. You know, it was gritty. It was real life. It was lighting as it was, and just rolling with it.
And my guilty pleasure of your stuff was 1,000 Ways to Die.
I've been doing this for 30 years, and I will say that was one of the funnest jobs I've ever done. It was so cathartic to go to work, and 4 days a week, you're killing two people, minimum,
yeah, every day. All right, so the show was back in 2011, 2012.
Yeah.
So it might be a little dated, and you know, not sure who's listening, but give me the background on that show a little bit, what the show was about.
So that show was sort of a Darwin show where we killed people doing dumb things. And every episode, I couldn't remember if they killed 5 people an episode or if it was 7 people an episode.
But is that would that be considered a recreation show, a reality show?
So not so much.
You didn't really kill anybody.
We didn't, no. Some people we wanted to, but we didn't kill anybody. That's why I'm like kind of a round peg in a square hole. I've come from that music video world and the sort of not so bachelor kind of reality show. So I've always done these weird hybrid shows, and that was one of them. It was all very much, we had a big crew, we had a prop truck, we had a great camera set up.
I mean, there's a lot of cinematographers that came out of the music video scene. If you go back to tons of them and you look back and realize what they shot back in the 90s, a lot of people came out of that. Is that a good training ground? What is it a good training ground? And what's the equivalent of it now?
Reality TV, funny enough. Because it's so funny, like if I was coming up today, I would not have that option of music videos. So when I was coming up, music videos was the place where you could convince people to give a young filmmaker some money.
And do something with.
And do some fun stuff with it.
What about the doc world?
I've done a bunch of music docs over the time. I am the auteur of the Dark Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
That puts me as the director of the Insane Clown Posse's content. So we've done a lot of work with. I've done a lot of work with the clowns, and we've done a lot of documentaries.
What was your biggest music video?
My biggest, longest hit was probably Meredith Brooks' "Bitch" video. That thing ran for the summer of '97. It's on a lot of people's worst annoying list.
I haven't heard that song for a while, but I do remember it playing to death.
Every now and then you're at like Texas Roadhouse, and there she is on the screen again.
Yeah, it's not on my playlist, but I remember that one. So, all right, so these days, I know that over the last couple of years, we've bumped into each other with your Jay Leno's Garage show. Axemen was not too long ago, and then... Before the world lost its mind, you were doing Naked and Afraid?
I was out doing my first Naked and Afraid episode. The ultimate reality show, in my opinion.
Yeah. Tell me about that experience.
That experience, well, I'm a fan.
Yeah, we've all seen the show, and I've watched it. I've watched it at least a season's worth, and I get it. But how much reality is in that? I always wonder whether or not.
So
is anybody really in danger on those shows?
I always wondered that. So I'm a huge fan. So I've watched a lot because I ended up on the road in places that don't have good internet. So we ended up having to watch cable. And so I ended up watching the Naked and Afraid marathon. So I was a fan. So I actually pursued the job as a fan. And then because I sort of respected it as the ultimate reality show. I mean, what can you really do? They're naked. There's no props.
They never seem that afraid.
Occasionally they are.
Yeah, I mean, the naked thing comes easier to
them. I mean, when they're in Africa and they're in their little boom, I think is what they call them, with all the sticks with the thorns around them, and there's lions outside, I mean...
Yeah, but I never get the idea that there isn't a camera crew standing 20 feet away with somebody with a rifle or something. I mean...
No, they're in Africa they actually have that.
I would think so. I mean, as the camera crew...
But where I was, we didn't. Most of the crews, they don't have somebody standing right there.
So are you in the same peril as they are?
Most of the time, except I have one layer of clothes on. Yeah. Like we had a, there was a bee thing, and everyone had to run.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm gonna get stung almost as bad as a naked guy.
Yeah, just not in as many places.
Hopefully, you never know. I mean, You're in that Naked and Afraid was a really hard job. We had a hike in every night day, hike out every day, live in the, pretty much in the weather that they did. The only thing, I don't have to stay overnight.
Do they have a separate? Or they shoot themselves at night, or they
pretty much.
So just the infrared cameras set up somewhere, and there's not a ton of nighttime, and I don't think it plays as well.
If it goes wrong, I mean, that's real.
Yeah, at night. So they are afraid
of
night.
Or during the day. They're hard places to get to. I mean, our poor lady, she had to get carried out of a thing.
Yeah, so you were on Naked Afraid when the world shut down for COVID.
Right. That was quite...
Where were you?
We were in Ecuador. So we thought we were out of the whole range of the thing. And we were just going along. Everything felt fine. Everything was going fine. We were a short while from making it to the end. And then in an hour that night, dun, 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 things changed. And then they changed rapidly.
All of a sudden you get
three or four times.
You get the word that the world is closing down?
The world was closing. They were at around midnight. We finally got word that the country was shutting down. All cars had to be off the road by 5. Airports are shutting down. So, and our poor guy is a man in a bubble out there. He's got no idea what's going on because we didn't think it was necessary to tell him because he wanted to get to the end. We wanted him to get to the end. It felt totally within grasp. And then that night it all just got crazy.
So there was no finish? You can't go back and do 2 more episodes. You can't just drop him back in again.
No,
say,
you can't drop
him. Let's close it up.
So he is like John Travolta in the bubble. I have to go there to his camp in the morning, and I'm like, "Hey, can you come out of there? We have to talk. It's time to put your pants back on because we gotta go."
How did he dig it? Or do we should wait for the show? I don't want to spoil it. But is this show gonna air?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And so, when is this gonna air?
Probably in the next 90 days.
Oh, okay. I can't give away the end.
Yeah, let's not do it anyway. Listen, I don't want to know. I want to watch it myself. So, but that season will air.
Oh yeah, I think I'll. They'll have to use me going in to end it because that's really what happened.
Yeah.
And I like that about the show. I mean, that show is pretty much the one of the most reality shows I've ever worked on. You're out there and you're just following. You try to follow. You can encourage and you can spin, but that one is as real as it gets.
What's sort of your favorite type of reality to work on? I mean, I'm sure that Naked Afraid is a challenge. I don't know if I'd really... I'm not saying I wouldn't do it, but I'm not kind of digging the hole having to be out there with them and a camera and all that other responsibility. Is it more of a Lennon's Garage, more structured, more, air-conditioned?
What I like about my career is I can't seem to get bored doing anything.
Yeah.
So I have actually really loved... the sort of outdoors, off-road warriors, axemen. I like being out in the nature. I love being out in the light. And you get a certain amount of freedom out there because you're out there and you have to make all the calls. There's no call in the office. They can't be watching over your shoulder. So it's sort of when you're out there doing your thing.
Yeah, so you're playing sort of producer, content producer. You're... camera operator, DP, craft
services. Luckily, I don't have to do the craft service, but you're out there creating story in the moment with your talent or your actors or your whatever. Your people are doing the job. And you're deciding on the lighting. You're deciding on the shots. Luckily, most times I don't have to do my own audio, but you do. I mean, a lot of these shows, you're your own audio guy too.
How many cameras on that one?
Depends on the show. Axemen, I think we had 2 cameras. Bering Sea Gold is a single camera run. Off-Road Warriors, we had many teams of people, but you were out there by yourself.
Storage Wars was a couple, 3 cameras?
Depended on the... and you become excellent at the line on a show called Storage Wars. You have 4 cameras, and 4 for the auctions, and then 2 for everything else.
And then on Lennon's Garage, there's a lot of suction cups.
A lot of suction cups. We have a GoPro department, pretty much. Gotta have it because we're on celebrity time. Leno is celebrity time. These people show up for this and they gotta get out by that. And they always get there and they go, well, I got another half an hour earlier. I need to leave. So we have a GoPro department there, and then we have three camera operators, a couple ACs, and usually we try to pack in four cameras because we do things once. We've learned that the hard way.
You can't ask for another take.
So, yeah.
What about like the, you know, you've got Donald, the expert.
Yeah.
And he'll evaluate the cars. And it doesn't sound scripted, but there's a certain amount of information he definitely wants to get across at that particular point. If he screws up, he says, you know, this is the first car on the market to have six tires or something. Do you
just one of those things? Oh, yeah, we go back then.
Yeah.
But producers, I think Jay is really used to live TV.
Yeah. Oh, my God. He grew up in,
you don't go back in time in live TV.
Yeah, once you've said it, it's done. So you're taking it.
Yeah, moving on. But, you know, when we don't get facts right, we have to do things again.
Yeah, that's about the only section where it seems like it's got to be a little bit structured. You know, everything else seems to be winging it in the moment, just conversational, which of course is what he's been good at his whole career. So, yeah. A typical car, how many cameras do you have when you're running one of those? Like how are you, was there a standard setup or did it depend on?
We evolved. We really did. We were a show that in the beginning, we were literally hanging our knees over the back end of a Tahoe with the door open. And then finally we're like, this is Leno. We got to get safe. So we evolved, and now we have a really cool low rent rig on the show. We've got two Cineflow arms, one off the back, one off the front, connected to Ronin 2. Got an operator in the back, got an operator in the passenger seat, and a focus puller in the back with the back camera. We do most of the work off of that. And that runs out with the cars, and it does a great job because now we have full 360 degrees coverage on the cars. We get the drive-bys, we get, really nice looking stuff, and it's so solid and not shaky anymore.
And then, is there anybody riding along? You ever like the back seat kind of stuff?
Or?
I know there's GoPros mounted on all over the place.
We have usually about 5 to 6 exterior GoPros. And then we'll have, with Jay and a guest, we'll have, I think we've got 4 cameras total in there. 2 wides, 2 singles. GoPros are awesome cameras.
Yeah.
Because they're so small, we can be very efficient with time. All the other options are either you can't have enough lens, either it's too wide, or you have to have an exterior battery, or you have to have an exterior record box, which is more cables and more time.
And you're not getting a whole lot of time to think this through either.
No. And some of these cars can be very difficult to get the GoPros into. I mean, sometimes we have to rethink, and it takes a really long, it takes a little more time. And imagine if we were doing something bigger cameras that needed more support or taking up more of Jay's window. Some of these cars are very small windshields.
How much time do you have? I mean, when do they let you know which car, which guest it's going to be?
We have we set up all those cameras in probably 30 minutes, 30 to 40 minutes.
But you show up on a Monday morning and they say,
well, that car just gets there and we have to wing it.
Here's the car today.
We know what it is, but.
But you don't get a chance to prep the car.
Because you got to sit there and you knock it around. You got to find the right spot so that it's not too shaky. The other thing, a lot of those old cars get super shaky. So you have to really mount them vigorously. So. Because they get that wobble in it.
What about the guest? How much notice do you get on that? Or does it even matter?
They're kind of the X factor. Who's coming today?
Yeah.
And we just work.
It's more important to know
machine.
What car you're going to be prepping than who's going to be sitting in it.
But that's a lot of cameras. What's this? That's 11 cameras in, a half an hour?
Yeah.
We're moving fast.
It took us longer to set up this podcast.
Yeah. And, Keith Sharons, just want to shout out to Keith, is an amazing GoPro rigger. And he... We've worked with Keith for a long time now on the show.
Do you tend to keep the same crew for?
Leno has a very loyal crew. We've had almost the same crew for 5 years.
But that doesn't mean you can drag him down to Borneo and put him on naked.
Leno doesn't travel well.
The crew?
No, Jay.
No, I mean your crew, not your. Not
the
your
crew is willing to go to Borneo.
Okay, so you can you take these people? Do you have like a set group that you?
Yeah, we travel.
That you travel. If you get a gig, do they get a gig? Is that kind of the thing?
We're always trying to sell ourselves as like the Leno car crew. So yeah. We're work for hire.
Well, I mean, is that sort of, that's...
It would be really nice to have... we're sort of crew, but we...
I guess the reason I'm asking this, because, I mean, in the reality world, especially now you've said, look, you got 30 minutes. You really... There's got to be a lot of shorthand. There's got to be a lot of trust in everybody doing what they have to do to get it done at that speed.
I guess you're right.
You know, I mean, at some point you really need to know what everybody's thinking and being reading each other's minds in order to get something done. Where's Paul going to want this? I'll put it here. And then you'll go, yeah, that's where I want it. Or move it an inch, but it's not in the wrong part of the car kind of thing. I would think you'd have to kind of want you. I mean, I've met a couple of your crew and they're all pretty sharp guys, but you know, at some point it's more of a marriage.
I would hate to have, if that show had to start from scratch and everyone had to relearn all that stuff, it would take them a while.
Out of all the shows you've done, has there been one that's been more challenging than the others? And I'm, but from a standpoint of somebody's come back and said, I don't want to use GoPros, or I'm looking to change the look of the show, and or they don't understand what's involved in getting that shot, and you've got some producer saying, you know, I'm not feeling this. This should feel more epic. You know, let's go shoot anamorphic IMAX cars and realities. Anybody ever like try to set the bar that high?
No.
No, good.
I wish. That really? Would be fun.
Yeah, but not in 30 minutes.
No, well, yeah, someone have to give, right?
Yeah, at some point. What's the craziest thing you've been asked to do?
Oh.
Answer this question, I guess.
Yeah. Craziest thing. There's been so many.
What about the, I came home and said, you can't believe what I did today. One of those moments.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Somebody told me to put a GoPro on a shuttle launch or something, and all of a sudden I'm hanging off the edge.
I can tell. All right. I remember the first day on Monster Garage. It was, everything was so new. What year was that? It has to be like 2001.
Monster Garage?
Yeah. And
the world will tell me.
We're doing like a pre thing. It's actually even before the show had even gotten started. So I was down there with Tom and Jesse, and they were giving away a Harley Davidson motorcycle to the winner of the contest. And Tom, they wanted Jesse to ride with the guy who won the contest. They wanted him to ride around Long Beach. So in order to get those shots, they're like, they turn to me and say, oh, here's your camera platform on a motorcycle. It was basically like skateboard wheels on plank wood. And my safety wire was this piano cable. And next thing I know, I'm like, all right. So I get on this thing. It's just made out of plywood. It looks like it's going to fall apart any second. And Jesse hates the guy driving my motorcycle. So he doesn't want anything to do with us. So he plows off. So now my guy is going across the bridge, the Long Beach Bridge, at like 90. I'm on the plank of wood laying there with a piano wire tied to my...
Do you have to get permits for this stuff?
I don't know. Back then.
And who would give you a permit to do this?
And I'm like winding through trucks as he's trying to catch Jesse. And I'm like, wait a second. I just had a kid. Just get me back.
What's the one show you wouldn't want to do again?
One show I wouldn't want to do again.
One environment. No,
World's Worst Tenant.
That's the one, the eviction kind of show is what I was going to call it. I couldn't remember the name of it. That one looked like I wouldn't want to be in the room with these people, especially with a camera.
And the people that were making it too were kind of weird.
Yeah, it was like that one where they used to hire detectives to follow around, see if the cheaters kind of.
Oh
thing.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. Did you ever do that?
Nothing. I did do a cop show, so I got hired by Langley to do a undercover sting show. They wanted people who could make story because they've been at it for 6 months with their cop shooters and didn't have their first episode. 6 months. So I end up in Savannah creating stories. So one of the things, the holy grail of the Langley kid's idea factory was he wanted a cop in a clown outfit. I'm partial to clowns. So
they creep me out.
So I got this cop. I'm like, hey, man, he's do a prostitution sting. And so I'm like, hey, well, would it be fun if we like did you guys in a clown outfit? Totally sold him on the idea. We shot him picking his clown outfit up.
All right, so back it up. The guy that's doing this thing is going to be dressed like a clown.
Yeah.
Is that to make him less obvious? I mean,
yes, to like get their everyone's guard down, the prostitutes' guard down.
And did it work?
Oh yeah, we got right in. It was amazing. They loved the outfit. Busted the people.
You know, I mean, when you show up with cameras, doesn't anybody ever think what's going on?
No, those were hidden cameras.
Oh, okay.
And then after the cops come in, you come running in.
Are there any rules that say they have to sign permission? And if so, why the hell do they do
that?
Well,
I'll get to that in a second.
Okay, yeah.
Because I'll tell you, this is all about a show that I would never want to do again. So we do the bust. Funny enough, they sign the release. Langley is in love with me. And then 3 days later, I get a phone call from Langley saying that I was fired. I got fired because the Savannah police wanted me out of town. They're like, that guy goes. Get that guy out of our effing town.
Why?
Because I, the cop outfit.
Oh.
The clown outfit.
The clown outfit.
They didn't really appreciate that.
All right, cool.
But anyway, so cop shows, I would never want to do. I don't want to be part of anyone's bad day ever again.
Yeah, the eviction one was a little, I mean, having to show up when somebody's getting evicted and then try to point a camera at them. You know,
Well, that one was all, can I say it here?
I guess so. We can.
That one was all fake.
They weren't really getting evicted?
No. That one was.
See, that's why I'm asking, like, if look, I've never been evicted, but I doubt very much if I'd sign the release saying, sure, let's do a show about it.
They get people to sign a release on those cop shows all the time.
Yeah, I always wondered why they would do that.
I think the sound guy goes over and the sound guys seem to have a knack for that stuff.
They pay him? I mean,
they go up and say, hey, you know, that was pretty cool back there. You sign that. Or they say, trade a pack of smokes for it. Or they'd say, hey, you want your story told truthfully.
Yeah, so sign here.
So sign here.
Oh, my God.
And some of them just want it.
There is that sense of I'm on camera. Everybody wants their minute of fame at some point, even if it's being evicted or thrown in the back of a cop car.
While we were busting people, it felt wrong. This is so gross.
How about the surgery thing? You ever want to look away? I mean, or do you get so, once your eyes in the cup, are you watching TV or are you watching
people? I'm watching TV.
Yeah.
When I have that cinematic immunity, something comes over me and I could be hanging my butt off of a mountain road, right? Hanging my ass out of a helicopter. I'm looking in that frame, I'm framing up, I'm checking exposure, I'm doing this, I'm just right there. I never think about myself.
Yeah, I did a helicopter thing once where we were just shooting, and then all of a sudden they want to bank and get a shot down. So now all of a sudden the weight, and you're starting to, the door's open, but you're strapped in.
Yeah, and then you fall into your harness.
You kind of fall
fine.
Into the harness.
You're fine then.
It's the first time they did it, I wasn't shooting anything, and it scared the hell out of me. Second time, my eye was at the cup, and there's sort of that weird sense of viewfinder courage or separation or whatever. All of a sudden you're not in it, you're watching it. And it's a whole different kind of, although when you watch it back every now and then, I think, what was I doing there? But
yeah, you're not only, you're creating it. You feel part of it.
Yeah.
Which is something that I think I'm totally addicted to, which is why I've been doing this for so long.
All right, we're going to come back here in just a minute with the craft of filmmaking. We're going to talk to Paul about tools you use for making reality television. We'll be right back. This week's episode of Hollywood, How Did You Get Here? Is brought to you by G Technology. Since their inception in 2004, G Technology has offered affordable, reliable, high-performance hard drives. This week, in collaboration with G Technology, we're offering listeners of this podcast 10% off G Technology drives when you shop at filmtools.com. All you have to do is enter code Hollywood when you purchase a G Technology drive on filmtools.com. That's HOLLYWOOD to get 10% off G Technology drives from Film Tools. So if you're in the market for some new storage, make sure to head over to Film Tools and use code Hollywood at checkout to get 10% off your next G Technology drive purchase. And now back to the show. All right, we are back, and we're going to talk a little bit about the gear and, you know, what you need to make a reality television show. So, Paul, what do you not leave home without? What do you not, what would you not show up on set without? Is there any one thing or does it depend?
It just depends. Everything is different. Every circumstance, every show is so radically different. There's no true set of stuff. And a lot of times you'll go work for a production company on a show and they have their cameras. And you're going to get this camera and then that camera comes with certain lenses or no lenses. And then a lot of times another show will have a lot of different cameras and there'll be one person, you, but you'll have your main camera, you'll have a time-lapse camera, you'll have three or four GoPros, you'll have a couple of other specialty cameras that you have to take care of, like captain's cameras or long-running players.
Are you shooting anything iPhones?
When you have to.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing it. And, you know, that's just for the YouTube stuff, but it's sufficient.
I love the codec on these things.
Yeah, it's
they have a great look.
Come a long way. So technology's come a long way. The one where we can kind of pull off this with iPhones. Was there a time? Was it difficult transitioning from? Well, you probably go back to standard def even.
Oh yeah,
standard def, HD, 4K. You've lived through all of those. God, how many owner's manuals have you had to read in your career?
I remember one. I think in 2006, where I was directing some commercials, still shooting some film. Shooting a lot of different types of reality shows. And I must have used, and that was a crazy time because digital was just coming on. HD was just coming on.
And the SLR revolution coming.
That was just burgeoning.
Yep.
So it was like 17 or 18 different cameras in 2006.
And that means different formats, different recording, different codecs, different compression ratios. You're mixing everything on a single show sometimes.
And so you run with this camera for a solid 2 months, you go do another show on another camera, and then you get that other camera back and you can't find the record button for a while. It's so funny. And you have to realign all your
You know, how often do you not hit the record button when you got 15 cameras rolling?
And I don't want to talk about that, Tim. Occasionally it happens to everybody. It's not an if, it's a when.
Yeah, we had earlier in the season, we did do one of these podcasts and ended up with a card that had like 16 seconds on it after an hour. Yeah. We had backups to all that stuff, but you just wonder what happened. You know, I still don't know actually on that one, but how often? So
it happens. It probably happens once or twice a season.
Yeah, I guess that's the
show
equivalent of like exposing your negative. It's just, you know, it's the worst thing you could happen and it's still going to happen.
And you get power shutdowns on GoPros all the time for various different reasons. Heat. Run out of media, that battery was not charged, whatever.
Yeah, it's pretty tricky. But it is easier, right? Is all this technology making it easier or is it making it harder? Too many options?
Well, I think the menus have too many options. There's so many. There's so much on the menus that are so not needed and they're so hard to find sometimes. Yeah. That's annoying. Like the Sony menus are... You need another level of graduate school for those. Canon menus were much simpler.
I mean, that's my alma mater. So, yeah, that worked out for me. But I'm using a recorder here where I spend 8 hours trying just to, and they're just going through the menus on this. The recorder does everything, and I don't need it to do everything.
No, you just wish, like, you could buy a certain package that does this and none of that.
Yeah.
Like a menu that you could choose your own.
I think that spending all the time I did in the manufacturers, I think that will come down. At some point, the manufacturing and the industry will stop chasing things that are picture related. We'll get to a point where we've kind of went, well, that's where we're going to go. And then we can start working on making it easier.
So you have your f-stop.
Yeah. And don't forget, I mean, a lot of this stuff, we're competing with iPhones. Does it get any easier than...
A crazy thing that I just bought. I bought the ATEM switcher.
Oh, yeah.
So we went into the Corona situation.
Right. That thing is gold during Corona.
Yes. We had to wait 2 months after we ordered it to get it. Anyway, so it's my wife does all these home cooking classes now. And now we have to broadcast Zooming. We're Zooming all day long. And she sits there with the iPhones just like this, but set up with an ATEM. And she sits there and switches between her cameras. And that little switcher thing, 10 years ago, you'd need a whole truck.
You know, yes, that's true. It really would be. And I'm using
the 10 guys.
I'm definitely using the phrase iPhone sort of generically, like saying Coke instead of Pepsi or something, because my wife is Android based and her phone is, phone images are amazing.
Yeah, they're just great.
You know, and that's where she's shooting. It's amazing what you can get away with. So, you know, it's sort of an exciting time, but it's kind of confusing as well. But I guess in reality, it's about getting the shot. As long, no matter how you got it, you got it. That, like you said, you don't, there's no second take. So,
yeah. So, I like, for my reality cameras, I would prefer one that had less lens choices. Like if I'm out doing a Barency Gold or a Naked and Afraid or Axeman, I need a camera that I can tell the stories from one spot sometimes.
So more of a fixed zoom type of camera?
Yeah.
What are you using on Axeman? What was that?
We...
Do you remember?
Yes. The one that... The Sony that had the two different lenses, the 705... Oh, Lord. I'm having an Alzheimer moment.
No, they don't make it anymore. It's okay.
It had two lenses, a wide lens, a wider lens, and a zoom lens. But we also used a fixed lens of that camera, the Z7.
Right. Oh, my God. That was a huge selling camera.
Huge. I mean, I used that for at least a decade. I remember the very last
that was tape and that was tape based.
Yeah. I remember the last tape labeling party we ever had. And we were like, this is the last. You will never do this again.
I've been, you know, since it's 2020 and I've been kind of cleaning out closets and stuff. I've got stacks of tape and absolutely no way to play them.
And if you have fresh tape, I'd hold on to it. If it's unopened, because it's going to be a look.
Nope. Yeah, but I guess, but I think a lot of these looks we could recreate. Right now, I just want to know what's on the tape. At some point, I'll go on eBay and buy a camera or something.
Yeah, I have a Super 8, HD Super 8. I can't play the tapes back.
Yeah. So,
but going back to the camera, I need a camera. But, you know, like, so we were out on Bering Sea Gold. We had the Canon C300, and that has, you know, your lenses that you have to put on. You have to make choices. Is it going to be the 24 to 105? Is it going to be the 16 and 35? Do I have time to put the 70 to 200 on? I don't know. But I would love to have had that show done on a camera that had all that in one lens.
Just one big, strong zoom.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but there's a lot of factors in that. There's the environment plays into that a lot. You know, just you're shooting in a really rough environment, and are you really changing lenses on a boat in a snowstorm? Just because you want to get that wider shot, all of a sudden they decided to go over to a corner of a boat that you need wider.
But if your boat is too small and you're stuck on the 24 to 105, you get no sense of environment.
Yeah.
So that was a hard show to make because of the lensing was so difficult.
How about the environment? I mean, it's pretty brutal. I've been up to Dutch Harbor for Deadliest Catch a couple of times. And I'm up there in the beginning of the season and out of there before they really started shooting when it was really kind of nice. I mean, the weather was a little chilly. It wasn't bad at all, but they're going out into horrendous environments.
Horrendous environments. That show just eats gear up. And then we would get that gear on Axeman and it would be broken. So we'd send it back and they'd be, why are you breaking stuff? Well, because you sent it to Deadliest Catch first.
Yeah, there's no chance to get through a season, I mean, on those cameras. They're just taking... Serious beatings.
Serious beating. We don't have such a bad beating in Nome on Bering Sea Gold, but it's raining, it's cold, it's wet, there's salt everywhere.
I mean, I always had a go bag. I mean, stuff with warmer clothes, even if we were shooting in LA, you just always had something in your trunk, but
yeah,
I didn't even know how to prepare for that.
And then you have, here's a funny thing. The every camera comes with a rain cover, right? The rain covers. No cameraman ever uses those. They end up with the big, giant, blue plastic bag that you crinkle up and you snap on top of your camera, and then you just undrape it when you need it.
I remember on Deadliest Catch, we show up with marine glue and heavy-duty bags and physically, like, glue things in place.
Oh, yeah.
Because they weren't, you know, kind of prep them for the year and just... Give them the best chance they could. We'd seal everything.
They would seal everything. We'd get cameras back from them, and they'd be just covered. Every seam would be covered in this, like, gooey.
Yeah, that's what I would That's what, that was me for a couple of seasons. I would go up and help him with that stuff. And we, every corner, every place that was never supposed to get wet when the camera was manufactured still needed to be sealed because it was going to get wet.
Oh, it's going to get really
wet. And then the bigger thing is if it got wet and then the wet froze, that's when it caused the most damage.
Or does it open stuff up?
Yeah, well, let's say it gets wet. You head inside and it's not freezing yet. The moisture's still in there. And now you're back outside. It's nighttime. It's dropped below zero. And that moisture then becomes ice internally and cracks things. And it was, it's not a great environment for cameras, but show's been on a long time.
So. Long time.
Yeah. All right. Now, what you're using today, is it easier to do? Let me back that up a little bit. 4K is really where I'm going now. Reality TV sort of got a pass for a while in terms of resolution. It was more about the reality. You were shooting in horrible lighting conditions sometimes. You were shooting things you couldn't control. Is the world, the requirements are different now? Are you required, the shows have to look less like what we were trained to think reality was?
I think the dirty secret on that is no.
No? Are you shooting anything in 4K for reality? Or did you ever have to make that jump?
We shoot 4K for Leno.
Yeah, it's a pretty show.
It's a pretty show.
The cars look great.
It's the cars need to look great. Jay needs to look great.
Right, your talent is celebrity talent.
And I was also, good. But we didn't always. And I totally encouraged production to make the jump and to start shooting 24 because I thought we should help Jay future-proof his shows.
So you shifted from what, 60? From shooting interlaced 60 to...
No, we were. I think we were 30.
30 frame down to 24 yeah. frame to give it more of that
And
that
they
look.
Instantly loved it. It was an instant big hit with the network, with the producers. It just seemed to really make the show a little more glamorous.
I think there is so much content being created that the look is sort of what starts to separate them now. Back in the days of Storage Wars, which I watched... But that's been on forever. So 10 years ago or something, there was a lot of it was accepted. It was more about the characters. It was more about whatever was in the box. It was more about, it, they're going to find a fortune in there. And if the camera buzzed, if the focus went out, every that was sort of acceptable.
Well, it's made it seem more real to the producers.
It did. But if I'm watching Leno, I'm watching very recognizable people. I'm watching celebrities. I'm watching Jay Leno.
And you're They're watching not, awesome cars.
Awesome cars. None of that is real to me, no matter what. So I don't expect it to look like real. I mean, we're here in Burbank shooting this, and we see Jay driving down the streets all the time in these cars. That's when it feels real, but not on television.
Well, it's interesting because going way back, talking about the look, like I think Tom Beers, the guy who owns Original, one of his big innovations was he was taking cameras at places that they could never been before, surgery rooms, motorcycle shops. Bering Sea Gold or The Deadliest Catch. And those cameras were really low res. They were the PD-150, mm-hmm. remember? And then it was the DVX and then a couple others started to be the Z7s and they were low res, gutsy cameras that could handle a lot of nasty environments.
Did you ever get a chance to work on any of the paranormal ones, the ghost hunter type things?
Yeah, I did one for Original. We did Alien Intent. And
I gotta be honest spooky. With you, I don't really remember that one.
No, that one never made it anywhere.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that one I'm gonna have to pretend I
well,
watched.
I did some work on Ancient Aliens.
I used to watch the Ghost Hunter one, which is not Original, but Pilgrim, I think, is the production company.
Yeah, Original never really got into the ghost thing.
Yeah, but I would watch it. I mean, it was kind of for a while there, it was kind of a thing to watch. And, 85% of that stuff. Technically, I could explain what you just saw because it was a camera issue. It was a lens thing. It was we used to have optical stabilization in all these small cameras that would flex every now and then and make something look like it just moved. It was like,
That's
awesome.
Dust
was dust.
They'll use it.
Yeah. So, all of a sudden it was a ghost instead of just something that we worked hard as manufacturers to get rid of. But they were big. So, I think those shows are still on. And then I also remember in my youth, MTV was really big with reality.
Well, they were the originators.
Bunham and Murray?
They were they did the one with the kids in the room.
The one in San Francisco.
Yeah, Big Brother. Whatever.
Yeah.
No, it was like something else.
Yeah, I can't remember.
They had the kids
enough.
In the room, and they not only kicked it off, but they killed themselves in the process.
Are they still around?
MTV?
Yeah, the reality shows on MTV. I haven't turned down MTV.
Yeah, that's all they are. They're
I'm 60 now. It feels weird to turn that channel even on anymore. So,
well, as we were talking about how things are constantly changing, they're constantly changing.
Yeah.
Right now, we're seeing the death of cable television.
Yeah, it's a little interesting. I you know what? I turned mine off.
Did you turn yours off during COVID?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was talking to the producers.
Everything is streamed at my house now.
I talked to the producers, and they were talking about one of their shows, and now they're stringing together the first and second acts. Why? Because they can't have enough. Not enough people are buying commercials.
Yeah, it's binging.
And not only that, but more people have cut cable during COVID while they're home than they were before COVID.
Yeah, it's sort of a perfect storm for, it's an election season, and you can't get away from that, so I don't really need TV for that. But I think the bigger thing is there's no live sports right now. For me, I kept cable for sports, and if there's not going to be an NFL season and it's not going to show up on my TV, I'll get what I need streaming. I mean, I'm Netflix and Hulu, and I'm probably paying 10 times as much than I did for cable because it's going to 10 different people, so I don't know what it adds up to be. But yeah,
it's changing the marketplace.
Yeah, I think it really is.
Call the herd.
Yeah.
Like when I got out of music video and to reality, all these like reality even needed more people working on it. So there was tons more opportunity to get jobs and do this little TV show and that little ghetto cable show. So there's an exponential growth in jobs, and now we're watching cable die. Is that growth gonna come back to haunt people?
Do I need it connected to my house now that I have a pipeline that can get everything with the same pipeline and that my phone is on and everything else is on? And
does reality play in a streaming market?
I don't know. I mean, the content I think stays. People like watching those things. How they get it might be different, and how you're going to pay for that content? Who's going to produce it and find a way to fill that and make money? Like we've not mentioned even a network really. We mentioned MTV once, but 10 years ago,
it would all have been about.
We would have said, "Oh, I'm doing this for NBC. I'm doing this for CBS. This is for this or History Channel,
or Discovery, or A&E, or Bravo."
Honestly, whenever I get a guest on who shoots something, if I got to find out whether was it Netflix, was it Prime, was it? I watched it. I loved it. And I'm a big fan of it, but I'm not even really sure exactly where I'm watching it from, where my content comes from. I just know it's there. You know, even my little Fire Stick, I don't even have to turn it on. I just talk to it now and say, play Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and it comes up. So
with that ATEM that we set up for Nina's class, HDMI cables go right in, right to your camera, and it works like that. I didn't even have to read a booklet on how to use it. it's all interpretive.
Yeah, I think it all has to kind of get that way. There's a whole generation of people that are just plug and play, and anything past that is too much of a challenge.
Oh, yeah, that would be me.
Yeah, maybe. All right, well, thank you again for coming by. I really appreciate you coming in. Stay in touch.
We'll see you around the block, Tim.
Yeah, I will be here. So, thank you very much, and everybody just hang in for a minute. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. I'd like to thank my guest, Paul Andreessen, for taking the time to stop by. And thank you for listening. I truly appreciate your support. Please take a second to click the subscribe button. We have a lot of fun guests coming up, and you don't want to miss it. I hope you join me next time on Hollywood How Did You Get Here?